Blog Talk Radio.
Today on Mr. Media, I'll talk to cartoonist Chris Brown, artist and writer of the daily newspaper comic strip Hagar the Horrible. Stick around, or we'll share the luck of Lucky Eddie with you.
Hey, did you know that you can listen to the latest Mr. Media on your phone with the Stitcher app? Stitcher is smart radio for your smartphone. Mr. Media is on demand and on the go with Stitcher. Download Stitcher for your phone today. Get the free download at Stitcher.com. That's Stitcher.com.
So much media, so little time. Who keeps track of it all? That would be me. This is Bob Andelman, and this is a Mr. Media interview. You know, MrMedia.com, MrMedia.com. Stop by and check it out. There are more than 700 archived celebrity interviews for your listening pleasure. The show is brought to you today by 1-800-DIAL-DJs. Planning a wedding, mitzvah, or corporate event in the New York, New Jersey, or Pennsylvania area? For any and all occasions, call 1-800-DIAL-DJs nationwide at 1-800-DIAL-DJs. That's 1-800-342-5357. And look them up online, 1-800-DIAL-DJs.com. Tell them Mr. Media sent you. Mr. Media is recorded live before a studio audience of famous Vikings, including Leif Erikson, Eric the Red, and Brett Favre, in the new media capital of the world, St. Petersburg, Florida. Hagar the Horrible is finally getting his due. The adventures of one of the most unique, consistently funny comic strip characters, a dirty, drunken Viking, of all things, is finally being collected in book form with publication of Hagar the Horrible, the Epic Chronicles. The strip, created in 1973 by Dick Brown, co-creator with Mort Walker of High and Lois, holds a special place in my heart. When it debuted, I was a 13-year-old with his own subscription to the Newark Star-Ledger. My parents paid for home delivery of the New Brunswick Home News, but it was an afternoon paper with horrible comics and even worse sports coverage. So I took my own money each week, earned cutting lawns in the summer, shoveling snow in the winter, and paid for a morning Star-Ledger subscription. And I'm proud to say that because of that, I have read Hagar from the very beginning. It was a big kick then, a few years ago, when an odd business magazine assignment landed me in the Sarasota, Florida home and studio of Chris Brown, son of Dick and his successor on Hagar. Chris was a wonderful host, and I think it's safe to say we hit it off pretty famously. Friendship aside, it's taken me years to convince Chris to step up to the microphones for Mr. Media interview. But the timing couldn't be better as we celebrate his father Dick's original work and Chris's continuing efforts on Hagar the Horrible. And with that, Chris Brown, my old friend, welcome to Mr. Media.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Media. I love being here. It's been too long.
I see you came appropriately dressed.
Yes, I did. I have my infamous papier-mâché helmet. It makes the same sound of you. But yes, this is my, I couldn't find one of those cheap plastic styrofoam helmets that fit me, so I made one.
Is that true Viking blue?
It's true Viking blue. Actually, I'll tell you, funny you should mention the Vikings, because I have blue and gold on this particular helmet because my nephew was one of the Florida Gators.
Oh.
So I have at the time they were blue and gold. Actually, I think they've got some kind of orange going on now. I'm not sure
orange
if they changed the colors.
Oh, yeah. Orange
and blue.
Let's get in there and fix those horns up with some orange.
I know, I know. It looks like I've got a couple of cassabas stuck to my head or something. So I'll probably do that.
So, Chris, tell everybody what took you so long to get to the show, because you know we've been asking you for a while.
Oh, well, you know, I had a it's true. And I would have loved to have been on the show actually every week. I would love to have been your Ed McMahon, But because I am a Danish ham, I must say that. The reason is 4 years ago, suddenly, we moved to Sioux Falls, South Dakota, causing many of my friends on the East Coast to think that sanity had left me, because we went from Sarasota, Florida, where everything is beautiful and they're waving palm trees, to Sioux Falls, South Dakota, where it is frequently 20 or 30 below zero in the winter.
Viking weather.
And people thought, he's a crazy guy, but, you know, I love this town. It's a fabulous town, and I'm very happy we moved here. But it did throw my schedule off a little bit.
That's all right.
So one thing that happened was no sooner did I arrive here than I fell and broke my left arm. Thankfully, not my drawing arm, but I broke my arm, and that took some recovering. And I had a couple of other health issues that I've recovered from also, and It's been a kind of a wild time. And then, of course, there's been the getting the house set up and learning the town and all. And it's been a big hairy move to move everything in your life across country to the center of the country. It was pretty spectacular. But here I am.
And we're delighted to have you here. And we'll expect you now every week in the future.
Okay, as, very good. That's not everything settled.
As our Ed McHorrible. How about that?
Ed McHorrible. Ooh,
that can be you.
That has a ring to it, but then so does the bathtub.
Ooh. Too much information. Too much information. So let's get back to the topic at hand. I'm guessing that this is a pretty exciting time for you and your brother Chance, as well as the publication of this new book. Do you have the book there? Hey,
yes,
the Epic Chronicles.
Actually, this is the second book in the series.
Oh,
and have you seen this yet?
No, actually, I haven't.
Well, here I'm going to send this to you through my little Brundlefly device.
Okay.
Here.
Let me see.
Let me just put it down into the computer transport slot.
Okay.
Here.
Okay, I've got it. I see it coming up.
It should be arriving there any second.
There it is.
Oh, that's great.
That is it, right?
That's it. And now check, make sure that it didn't come out with the, sometimes all the printing is reverse.
Oh.
And occasionally if you send a baboon, it turns them inside out. So, yeah.
No, I think I got it right here. Thank you very much.
I love modern technology.
I look forward to reading that. Now, I do have the first version, the first year's worth right here. And we'll put that up. But I'm not giving you that back, so
okay.
Sorry.
You know, I love that first edition because my brother and I wrote the introduction to it, and it was really good. Actually, we wrote one introduction, and then the foreword to the book was written by Brian Walker, who might as well be a virtual brother in the Brown clan, because he's Mort's son, and Mort is our virtual uncle, Mort Walker, I should say, the creator of Beetle Bailey and High and Lois, who my dad worked with for 45 years. So, and now my brother draws High and Lois, and Brian and Greg Walker write it, and then Chance works with me on Hager as well.
We'll have to get Chance and Brian and Greg on the show sometime. I've had Mort's actually been on twice.
Oh, I love it.
So I think we need to, you know, close the circle and have the rest of the guys on.
Oh, that's great. That's great. They would love it. They would just love
now,
it.
Now, we're going to have to break already for commercial in just a second. But, you know, I'm thinking there has been this, the last couple of years, there's been this real growth in collected dailies. I think it started... It really drew attention and was done well with Calvin and Hobbes, and then Farside. There were some beautiful editions of those. But then Charles Schulz's Peanuts is getting that kind of attention. And now to, you know, see Hagar, to me personally, I just think it's wonderful.
It is. It is. It's well, you know, and also they did a lovely, lovely job on this. Well, I'll tell you about that after the break, but they really did it upright.
All
so
right.
I'm very happy with what Titan Books has done with this series.
All right.
So.
Well, let's do that. Let's take a quick break. This is Bob Andelman, and you're listening to and hopefully watching the Mr. Media Radio interview with Hagar the Horrible No, not Hagar himself, despite the horns. This is cartoonist Chris Brown, who draws and writes Hagar. There you go. And we'll be right back.
How can we help our kids prepare for the future? This is Stevie Van Zandt. I don't have to tell you that children face pretty tough challenges these days. It can be pretty hard to keep them involved in their schoolwork. We adults need to make sure our kids find something in school that really sparks their interest. And nothing does that like music. Not only is music in school fun, but studies show that kids who learn music find science and math concepts easier to grasp, and that they show significant increases in self-esteem and thinking skills. Music and creativity go together. Your school music teacher can tell you all about it. So help prepare your children for the future. Art is not a luxury. It is an essential component of the quality of life. Encourage them to learn to love music.
A PSA brought to you by MEMC, the National Association for Music Education. Music, part of a sound education.
Well, this is Bob Andelman, and you're listening to and hopefully watching the Mr. Media radio interview with Hagar the Horrible Cartoonist, Chris Brown. Chris, how old were you when Hagar debuted?
Oh, gosh. Oh, many, many years ago in a galaxy far, far away. Hagar started in 1973,
I think, right?
1973. We started working on it in 1972. So when we started working on it, I was exactly 20.
Oh, okay.
But I've been working with my dad around the studio really since I was about 15. So.
Yeah, so now you said we. That's what I was kind of getting at. You were involved in the strip from the beginning.
Yes, from the very beginning. In fact, I think that the thing I am the most proud of from that first month is that I saved Lucky Eddie, who is Hager's sidekick, mm-hmm. from the wastebasket. My father was going to use Lucky Eddie in one gag, and that was it.
Wow.
You would never see Lucky Eddie again. And I literally took it out of the wastebasket and uncrinkled it and held it up in front of him. And I said, this is a keeper. This is the Robin to your Batman, you know, the Sancho Panza to your Don Quixote. So I'm very pleased with that. And I'm pleased with that on a number of levels. But all the characters in the strip are based on members of our family. And Lucky Eddie is very special to me because he is based on Edmund Brown, who was my father's brother.
Oh.
And who passed away several years ago, but he lived long enough to see himself semi-immortalized in comic strips as Lucky Eddie. So.
And what about Hagar's wife?
Hagar's wife, Helga, was based on my wonderful mother, Joan Brown.
Oh, Rose.
Yes, and, like my father, Joan was Irish-American on both sides of the family, mm-hmm. and her ancestors came from County Clare, and my father's ancestors came from County Cork in Ireland, both desperately poor places, and they met in New York, mm-hmm. and fell in love. She worked in the circulation department at Newsday, mm-hmm. My father started dating her, and as he liked to say, he took her out of circulation.
Oh man!
Only my father could pull off that joke. Sorry.
That's all right. Well, it's funny for me is that, having read this strip from the very beginning, my mother-in-law's name, Helga.
Really?
True story.
Oh, my gosh.
You know my wife, her mother.
I've met a couple of Helgas in my life, and they're rare, yeah. But they're good.
and what's odd is, and I mean no disrespect to my late mother-in-law, but when I met her, she looked a lot like Helga. In Hagar.
Oh, right.
She,
woman of substance.
Yes, exactly. And she changed quite a bit over the time. I like to think that I tamed her or something, but Yeah, it always struck me as funny to read the strip and go, oh, right, that's the other Helga in my life. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, my mother was the inspiration on many levels for Helga, and that started my dad creatively down the path to basing all the characters in the strip, including the dog. The dog is based on Snert, a real dog that my father had. and Hamlet, the thin little wisp of a boy, was based on me when I was much thinner and wispier. And Honey was based on my sister Sally. And Lute, the wandering minstrel, was based on my brother Chance, who now does High and Lois with Greg and Brian Walker. And the reason that my brother was a wandering minstrel in the strip is that he was in a rock and blues band in 1972 and 73. So.
Well, so let's advance the story a little further. Tell us a little about when the time came that you actually stepped into your father's rather large footsteps to take over Hagar.
Well, in let's see, my mother passed away in 1985, and in 1988, my dad started to get sick, and at first we thought that his diabetes was getting worse, but it turned out that he had cancer. He had a very rare and inoperable cancer in his esophagus, and they couldn't quite treat it with they ordinarily would have treated this kind of cancer with radiation, and they couldn't because it was too close to his heart. And that seemed to set him up for, as soon as the doctors saw where it was and what it was, he knew that my dad only had a few months left. Mm-hmm. And, it was a very sad time, very, very stressful time. And, my brother and my fiance and myself spent many, many days on end in my father's hospital room there in Sarasota. And it was a long, long, sad period. And then at the end of that period, when my dad did pass away, Joe D'Angelo, my father's boss at King Features, the then president of King Features, came down to Florida for my father's funeral and stayed for a few days and was very gracious. And he took my brother and I out to breakfast one morning and asked us formally if we would be interested in continuing drawing the strips, drawing Hagar and High and Lois. And we said, yes, please. Don't make us go get real jobs. Please let us continue cartooning. And we were very grateful to him. The syndicates are sort of your partner when you're doing a comic strip. And there are good syndicates and not so good syndicates. And we've been very blessed. King Features has been obviously great to us. They have a great sales team and all like that. But also, Joe D'Angelo was and is, he's no longer the president there, but what a class guy, what a great guy, and really changed my life, and my brother's life, really gave us the ability to continue doing this. I mean, I would love to continue drawing Hagar regardless, but you have to have somebody who writes the checks who agrees that you should be the one to draw it. And Joe D'Angelo was that guy.
Yeah. And, so you took over Hagar, but Chance didn't immediately jump in on High and Lois. He was still continuing as a minstrel, I guess, for a while.
Well, Chance was working on High and Lois for years before this.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, it was in the 70s when Chance didn't really give up his music career. He just sort of put it on the back burner and put working with us on the comic strips on the front burner. And it was really around 1980 that my brother and I and my parents all moved to Sarasota, Florida. It was at least early 80s, late. All of us that okay, this is serious now. We're going to be cartoonists now. And no, so my brother was actually, he worked for years on High and Lois. It was, when Dad actually passed away, it was, there was like a little bit of, okay, now what do we do? But essentially what we basically have done is we've continued to do what we were doing. And, my brother used to work, very closely with Dad on High and Lois, and now he was working with Mort Walker and Brian and Greg Walker on High and Lois. And it was a strange time. It was a strange transition. There was a period of about a year where I was writing the gags, doing the pencils, doing the inking, and doing the lettering. And which ordinarily we would be done by two or three or four different people. And that year when I was doing all those jobs, it was a little much. And I think the gags were still okay, but as I look back on it now, I realize that I didn't really have my chops, as we say, as an inker, and I really needed some professional help, and I don't mean a psychiatrist.
No. Never suggest that.
So my father had worked with a great political cartoonist and famous inker named Dick Hodgins, and they had done a couple of graphic novels that appeared in Europe of Hager, and Dick came on board to help me with the inking. And a few years later, Bud Jones, who had done some of the gag writing, came on board in a larger way to write more of the gags. And my life's been better since.
Very good.
Well, I'm able to focus more on what I do best, which is writing a few gags and doing a whole lot of drawing. And I'm happier doing it that way.
Well, let's take one more quick break. This is Bob Andelman, and you're listening to and hopefully watching the Mr. Media radio interview with Hagar the Horrible Cartoonist Chris Brown. And we'll be right back.
This is a public disservice message from the National Lampoon Radio Hour.
Don't waste your evenings doing volunteer work at your local mental hospital. Remember, even if you do, the crazy people there will probably think you didn't.
This is Bob Andelman, and you're listening to and hopefully watching the Mr. Media radio interview with Hagar the Horrible Cartoonist Chris Brown, who, by the way, is also father-in-law of Bizarro cartoonist Dan Peraro. Chris, we were on break, and you were telling me you had a great Stan Lee story to tell.
Well, it's great to me. I don't know if it'll
all
be great
matters
to anybody else in the world, but it was great to me. You know, one of the wonderful things about being a cartoonist is Mike Peters, who does Grimmy, Mother Goose and Grimm. Mm-hmm. Mike Peters said, "Isn't this the greatest job in the world?" You know, because you not only get to draw for a living, which you know is illegal in some parts of the world, but also you get to hang out with some of the most interesting, creative, fun people that you would go to a Comic-Con to meet, and they're your buds, they're your buddies. And my father had this. I didn't even realize how much my father had this, but my father hung out with Kurt Swan, who drew Superman for years and years and years. Mm-hmm. And he would play golf with him all the time. And all during those years, I was reading all these great Superman comic books, and I had them memorized. I loved them so much. So such amazing work. And I didn't realize until Kurt Swan and my father were much older that this was that guy. This was the guy that was drawing Superman during those tender years of my development, you know. So as I started to get involved in cartooning more and more, I started to come to more of the National Cartoonist Society functions. And one day in the 1980s, I was standing in line in the queue to go into the ballroom of the then Museum of Cartoon Art, Moore Walker's Museum of Cartoon Art, which has moved around the country, but at that time it was in Boca Raton, Florida. And I was standing in line, and I found myself standing in back of one of my gods, Stan Lee. And we're standing in line, and where the line is moving forward. And at one point, he turned around, and I introduced myself, and I'm Dick Brown's son, and I love your work. I grew up, and he said, "Oh, I know who you are. I love your work in Playboy. I love Cruiser," and I was like, whoa. Floored. I was floored. He had ever heard of me outside of the context of that I was Dick's son, you know. But I'll tell you, that kept me going for years. That probably added a year to my life. I just love that. And that's one of the things I love about cartooning. And the cartooning world overlaps with graphic novels and comic books and comic strips.
Well, since you told that story, I'm gonna ask you to tell one I do know, but you can tell here. And that's how you met over lunch, sandwiches, again, Will Eisner.
Oh, well, actually, it was Harvey Kurtzman that I went. Although I met Will Eisner, but I'll tell you how I met Will Eisner.
Yeah.
Maybe you're thinking of that. Were you thinking of the Harvey Kurtzman story or the Will Eisner story?
I was thinking, as I recall, didn't you meet, you met Will, it was you and Cat Ironwood, and it was at like in the sandwich or the break room or something at one of the cartoon art museums?
You're right. It was in the original Museum of Cartoon Art in, I think it was in Rybrook, New York, or near there, near Greenwich. You're right. You know this story better than I do. But yes, my father and Will Eisner were both going to talk on the same day at the Cartoon Museum in Connecticut. And it was fascinating. And I was my father's wheel man at the time because my father had various eye problems, cataracts and glaucoma, and he no longer drove. So for many years, I drove him everywhere. Either myself or my brother drove him everywhere. So, yes, so Dad spoke for a while and Drew did a little chalk talk. And Will got up and talked and was fascinating. And then we all retired to this little sort of kitchen area in the back of the museum. And they had made these great French bread sandwiches. And they're the open jars of mayonnaise and mustard and all these things were spread out. And we were just slapping sandwiches together and sitting around, and I got to sort of sit at the at the foot of two of my heroes, my father and Will Eisner, the spirit. And there he was, as big as life. And, Will Eisner, at this time, he looked kind of like, my impression of him was he reminded me of the Kingpin, the villain of Spider-Man. He actually looked like if the Kingpin and maybe Lois Lane had a child. it would have been Will Eisner, because he was far more svelte than the Kingpin. But you know, he was lacking in hair. He was statuesque, and he would open his mouth, and these fantastic stories would come out of his mouth. It was fascinating. And I felt like, well, this is heaven. This is just heaven. I've been blessed by many amazing moments like that, where I've been, I've been able to become friends with various cartoonists that I love. I've worked for, over the years, I've worked for some of the most amazing editors ever. I mentioned to you, earlier that I had done some work with Byron Price. I also worked with Michelle Urie at Playboy magazine, really the greatest editor I ever worked with. And just fascinating people over the years. And I've been very blessed. And now here I am in South Dakota, a different kind of blessed.
True, very true. And let's touch on one more thing, and then we'll take our last break. And I promise this will be the last break. I mentioned as we came back that you are a father-in-law of Dan Ferraro, the cartoonist behind Bizarro. Didn't plan to be the father-in-law of Dan Ferraro, as I recall. It's just kind of happened. It's one of those things that happened in Vegas, but that actually people talked about after Vegas.
That's right. It didn't stay in Vegas. What happens in Vegas sometimes follows you home like the Hound of the Baskervilles. But actually, the day that we met Dan, we were taking a big family trip, and my daughter was living at this point in New York City, and we were living in Florida, and we had other relatives that were living in California, and we converged in California and then all drove together to Las Vegas, and the day that we met Dan, as far as we knew, this was a friend of Ashley's, probably somebody that she was dating, and that's really all we knew about him. We knew that he was a hugely talented cartoonist, and she had met him at one of the National Cartoon Society functions. Mm-hmm. And that's really all we knew about him. And then in the afternoon, he said he had a surprise to spring on us. And would we all meet him down in the lobby? And we knew that he was friends with Penn and Teller, and we thought, he's got tickets to Penn and Teller. That's the big surprise. Well, no. What he had was a ring. And he proposed on the spot to Ashley. She accepted, a limousine pulled up, we all piled into it, and we drove off to one of these little chapels where Dan and Ashley were married hours after meeting Dan by an Elvis impersonator, just like you see in the movies. And Elvis comes out, and he has a boombox, playing the da-da-da, you know, the introductory music that you always hear for Elvis coming on stage. And here comes Elvis. He's got the white flowing cape and the Elvis, whatever you call that. And he comes out with the boombox, and he says, let's hear it for the band. And he puts the boombox down in this chapel. And I noticed this one thing. I don't want to paint the picture of myself as being superstitious, but there were 20 people in the room with cameras, and there was also a video camera that was shooting a documentary about Dan. Okay? There were a lot of cameras and a lot of different kinds of cameras. And when we went into the chapel, none of the cameras worked, including the giant video camera that was being hoisted by like a professional cameraman. None of the cameras worked. None of the microphones worked. It was as if we were in like some sort of a Stephen King story where, you know, and I thought, this is bad. This is a bad sign. You know? I immediately wanted to check Dan's scalp for 3/6 and things like that. So, But indeed, they did get married. The marriage took. They are still married. He's turned out to be a wonderful guy. And as I've mentioned to you, my biggest qualm with Dan now is that he just draws too well. He's very funny, and he's a very, very talented artist and multi-talented. And it turns out that I do love him now. At the time, the limo driver, I was sitting next to the limo driver. We just had people packed in the limo to go to the little chapel. And the limo driver could see that I wasn't taking this news really well. I was sort of on high simmer, you know. And the limo driver looked back at Dan, and he looked over at me. Now, you understand, the Dan had been talking to the limo driver for over a week, right, setting this up, you know. So the limo driver, I only had known Dan for about 3 hours. So the limo driver looked back at Dan, and he looked over at me, and he said, "You know, he seems like a nice guy." And I looked back at the limo driver, and I said, "Well, you know him better than I do."
Oh,
I was very proud of that line. But with the passage of time, he's grown on me. In fact, only on my north side, like lichen. But take a lichen to a lichen.
And on that, ladies and gentlemen, let's take our final break. This is Bob Adelman, and you are listening to, and no doubt watching, the Mr. Media interview with Hagar the Horrible, cartoonist and father-in-law of Pizarro cartoonist Chris Brown. And we will be right back.
University of Illinois Extension.
Maybe you're getting overdue notices from creditors. Your accounts are being turned over to collection agencies. You may be worried about losing your home or your car. When you don't have enough money to cover your family's living expenses and pay all your bills, the first step is to reduce your spending wherever and however you can, so you don't keep falling farther behind. For ideas on how to cut spending, visit www.toughtimes.illinois.edu. A message from University of Illinois Extension and this station.
This is Bob Adelman, and you're listening to and hopefully watching the Mr. Media radio interview with Hagar the Horrible cartoonist Chris Brown. And while we were away, Chris was telling me a story. Hello, Chris. Thank you.
Hi, Bob.
I doff my headphones to you, sir. Chris was just telling me a great story about how after his dad died, he had to go to New York and meet with some King Features salespeople and the editors and really convince them that he could do the job. And
yes,
he did that by doing a drawing of Hagar upside down. And so he could prove to them that he knew the strip upside down and inside out. And coincidentally, he told that story, and I happen to know that he has a little pad handy and has agreed to give us a little demonstration, as awkward as it's going to be, of how he draws Hagar. So, Chris, if you still feel good about doing this, let's take a shot at it.
Yes, I will. Let me see if I can get this positioned in such a way that you will be able to,
we're good,
to see this.
All right.
Through the miracle of Apple computers. Okay. I tell you what, let's see if I can. It's a little awkward, but I tell you, I'll give it my best shot.
Okay.
Let's see. The problem here is going to be when I look away from the screen. Okay. Can you make that out?
Yep, no problem. As a matter of fact, I have my black Sharpie. Let me see if we can get it in the kit. And a piece of SpongeBob stationery upside down. So, I'll be drawing here as well. It won't look anything like that, though. All right.
Am I staying on screen?
Yeah,
okay.
Good.
Well, what I did was I went into this office filled with the King Features salesmen, some of the greatest salesmen in the world, and the vice president of King Features said, "I don't want to make you nervous, but you've got about 30 seconds to win these guys over." And so I went into the room and I drew Hager upside down, like this.
Right. I'm drawing alongside you here, and I'm telling you, it is not as easy as you make it look. All right, I'll just go ahead and show folks what I've drawn while you do the real thing.
Oh!
I
love that.
I'm just copying very badly.
That's Hager after a battle.
Yeah, it doesn't look any better upright, folks. Oh my goodness. Okay, so now let's focus on the real thing. Look at that.
This is what I did. I drew Hager upside down, and then I flipped it over like that so that they could see that I basically got it right. But I did this real big. Okay. I did it real giant on a big newsprint pad. And then I turned to them and I said, now you can go tell the editors that the new guy knows Hager backwards and forwards, that you saw him draw Hager upside down. And they applauded, and that broke the ice. And I've told Ashley, my daughter, over the years, Ashley, that was the cartoon that allowed you to go to college.
Very good.
So, but I was mentioning to you earlier that when my dad passed away, Hager was in 1,600 newspapers, about half of that inside the United States and half of that in Europe and other mm-hmm. places around the world. And that's a fabulous list, and we were very happy. But I was nervous when Dad passed away that we would lose some papers, because that does happen when the originator, when the real creator of a strip passes on and the work passes on to somebody else's hands. Very often you will lose some papers. Well, in the 3 years following my dad's passing, we actually picked up over 200 more papers. We didn't lose papers. And I'm going to tell you very honestly that it was not because I had added some little dash of Tabasco sauce or something to my ink. It certainly wasn't that I was writing better or drawing better, because those first couple of years were not my best work. The salesman at King Features really came through, and they got Hager into papers where it hadn't appeared previously, and they managed to convince editors to give me a shot, to hang in there with me. They were great. I've worked for three syndicates. I really have nothing bad I can say about any of the syndicates I've worked for. I've worked for the three greatest syndicates in the world: Universal, United Media, and King Features. You can't work for better people than this. But I have to say that King Features is very special. I think that should I ever do another comic strip, I'll probably offer it to King Features first, because they have some of the best. They have some of the best people behind the scenes, including the salespeople, and the executives. They have some amazing people, people that really care about the comics. And that's it. I'm going to get sloppy.
Let's not have that happen.
It's a great syndicate. It's a great syndicate. I've been very lucky. I've worked for some great magazines and some great people over the years, and I've been blessed.
Well, now you mentioned, and before we wrap it up, you did mention doing a second strip. When we met, you were doing Raising Duncan about your pup. And I wondered, you being a cartoonist and being a Brown, I imagine that doing something on the side is never too far from your focus. Obviously, you've been doing Hager full-time for many years, and you have done other things. You did Cruiser. You did Raising Duncan,
yep.
A Cruiser for Playboy. What's in your mind now? Is it books? Is it, you know, what kind of things do you want to be doing in addition?
It is books.
Amazing that I knew that, folks.
Yeah, see, you did that very well. This is not my book,
okay. But
it is a book, as you can see with the title. This is a wonderful, wonderful children's book by Lane Smith, who did The Stinky Cheese Man and many other things. And I just love children's books. I love comic strips. I'm going to keep drawing comic strips until they take my pencil away. But I do want to do children's books on the side. I over the last couple of years since I've moved here, I've formed a couple of really nice relationships with a few editors in New York City, including there's one editor at one of the major book publishers in New York who seems to like my work. I've never met her in person. I've only corresponded with her through the mail. But she has assured me that if I keep sending her books, she is going to find the book of mine that she will be able to publish. And she has given me sage advice over the last couple of years, including not so many dinosaurs. There are a lot of dinosaur books out there. So I'm hoping that in the very near future, I will be able to ring you up over this magical device, this crystal ball that you have, Mr. Media, and that I will be able to announce to you that I have finally got a children's book that I can show. I have a sketch of two characters here. This is on like a little odd piece of paper. This shows you how what a class operation I have. I have laundry lists and things that I draw on. Well, these are two characters, and you know what? I can't even tell you the names of these characters because the names of these characters is a secret. And I'll tell you why. I'll tell you why it's a secret. These characters are based on two real children that I met here in Sioux Falls. And I don't want those kids to know that these characters are named after until I have a book that I can place in their hands, because their names are part of the title.
You're not keeping these kids in the basement right now, are you, Chris?
No. They are actually the first two children that I met. They're a brother and a sister, and they are a brother and a sister in the book. And this is actually a book that is sitting on the desk of my editor in New York City right now. And I already got a note back from the editor saying, I've got your package and I can't wait to read it. And I had drawn this big elaborate cartoon on the envelope, and she said, oh, by the way, I am framing your envelope. So that was lovely. That was lovely to hear.
Nice.
So hopefully that will be my other hat, will be that of a children's book author, artist.
That would be just great. Well, listen, folks, we spent a good long time with Chris Brown. He's a wonderful guy. I want to encourage you.
Yes,
check out his work every single day in your local newspaper. He's the cartoonist on Hagar the Horrible. And you can order the first books in the series, Hagar the Horrible, The Epic Chronicles. I'll hold one up here, but you'll be seeing it throughout the interview. It's Hagar the Horrible, The Epic Chronicles. The first two books are out. The third book is on its way. These are from Titan Books. You can see it at titanbooks.com. Or you can order it right now at a great price at MrMedia.com. Chris, always a pleasure to talk. So glad we finally got you to do the show, and I hope you'll come back soon.
I absolutely will. Mr. Media has a special place in my enlarged Viking heart.
Oh, my God. Hey, Chris Brown, thanks so much for being on Mr. Media, and good to see you, my friend.
Thank you. Great to see you.
All right.
See you soon.
Bye-bye.
For more original interviews with your favorite daily cartoonists, surf over to our main website, MrMedia.com, MrMedia.com. Subscribe to Mr. Media on iTunes and you'll never miss a show. Just search Mr. Media Interviews from within iTunes and subscribe for free. You can also listen with a piece of string and a tin can in many locations. If you've got an idea for a guest, a comment on today's show, or would like to advertise on Mr. Media Radio, email me directly at bob@mrmedia.com. You can also follow me on Facebook, Twitter, or YouTube. Thanks so much for joining us today. I really appreciate you sharing a piece of your day with Mr. Media. Thanks for listening.
Hey, everybody. This is Kevin.com Brown from the Emmy Award-winning 30 Rock. And you know what? I wish I had 30 rocks to throw at Mr. Media's ass. Yeah!